So you walked into my house wearing hooker boots today.
That's what happened.
You're going out to meet some friends.
I'm going to a bar.
Specifically, you're going out for pizza.
Yeah, I'm going out for pizza. And then after, we're going to like an Irish pub.
Right. There was a whole thing about these boots.
Yeah, because I look like a hooker.
Now, to your credit, because of where you're staying right now, you only have a small selection of shoes to choose from.
Yeah.
So you had to choose these boots, and they don't particularly go perfectly with the skirt that you're wearing.
They don't.
So they come across like hooker boots. But they only come across that way because of the way you had folded them. You had folded them down to your knees.
Yeah.
And there was something about the juxtaposition of the suede that was on the inside of the boot mm-hmm. with the leather on the outside, plus the nylons you're wearing, and the skirt, which obviously looks a little
hookery. Originally, it looked preppy, right? Cute knee-high boots, plaid little like skirt, obviously tights, a little bit like see-through. So I thought it's a cute preppy look. I look like Pretty Woman.
See, this is where you and I are different though.
Why?
Because you still have a little bit of the keeping up with Kardashians in you. I have no problem wearing hooker boots. I've got like 3 pairs upstairs.
Yeah.
And when I put them on, I look like a hooker. When I go out with my friends, I have no problem. It's the first thing out of my mouth. I say, yeah, I look like a hooker today,
oh,
guys.
Oh, girl, that was literally my plan.
Okay.
100%. I was going to walk in and I was going to be like, this is what's happening today. You just got to deal with it. I look like a hooker today. Like, if anyone needs like a free drink, just I'll get the rounds. 100%. I'm able to do that. The thing is though, and obviously my relationship with you is different, but like I can come to you and be like, what do I look like? What's happening here?
Mm-hmm.
But then if I'm already out and there's nothing I can do about it, and I've committed to the fold, or like I've committed to it being all the way up, I just own it.
I'm a chatted out person, and wherever I go and whoever I'm with,
yeah,
in order for me to feel comfortable, I need to chat things out. However, the other day you were talking to me about the disappearance of Kate Middleton.
Yep.
And we were just theorizing. Well, you were theorizing about her whereabouts because it was fresh in your mind. I had gone through I'd gone through that rabbit hole a day prior. Yeah. I was Kate Middleton out. I didn't feel like going over it because I'm like, I'm over this. You were still in it.
No, I'm right? still but, in it. I'm right. still in it.
You're still in it. I now understand what it's like to be on the other side of that. When I think about guys who aren't into me, and I'm like, why would you not want to be in this little banter session with me? How yeah. do you not love that? And now I'm with this Kate Middleton yeah. thing, I'm starting to see a little bit the other
yeah,
side
that's
of
not
that
fair, because you were just moody the other day.
No,
generally you're very good at being able to give a little bit back. You're good at being, this is what happened, this is my perspective. Like, we can bounce off of you. But I think that day you were just kind of over it.
No, the premise of the Kate Middleton disappearance, I am over. Because yeah. it's not a shocking thing to me. People were like, oh my God, is there an affair? Is there this? I'm like, guys, it's just another affair. It's just another divorce.
But then that's also sad. That's also sad that you've become so not fazed
yeah.
by bad things in life. That's yeah. not a good thing to be proud of.
Oh.
If you see bad things happening to you and you're just like, I have no remorse or empathy or shock impact or sympathy or anything like that, that's also not a good thing.
Yeah, I'm definitely numb in yeah. that department.
Yeah.
For sure.
But I think that's because of the crap you've been through.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because you're a numb person.
Mm-hmm.
It's because specifically to certain situations in life that you've experienced, you're a little bit more numb because you're still dealing with shit. You're going through the motions of healing.
Well, that's depressing.
That is depressing.
Who knows? By the time this comes out, maybe Kate Middleton, the whole fam jam would have explain their...
It is what it is. If he's having an affair and he's knocked someone up, just own it. I always think that's the best thing to do. I apply this to real life as well. And I think we're similar in that way because I want honesty regardless of how bad it is.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what a terrible thing he, she has done, be honest and we'll deal with it. But the minute you're keeping secrets, the minute you're not being transparent, that's when I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah. And how do they not know that by now?
But that's the way they deal with things, right?
It's like the Streisand effect.
Yes.
So today is part two of Ego, where mm-hmm. we're talking about how it affects work and relationships. This is going to be an interesting one. Last week, we talked a lot about what the ego is, mm-hmm. its definition. So if you haven't heard it, go listen to that because it's pretty important before you get to this episode. One of the things I'll pull from that, though, is we focused a lot on the beginnings of how you develop a big ego, which is being rewarded for normal tasks. So coming to this week where we're talking about relationships, a lot of the tools and skills that revolve around separating your ego out of the relationship involve you focusing on doing things for your partner that don't involve rewards mm-hmm. for yourself, aka loving unconditionally.
Yeah, it's like that Friends episode with Phoebe who she was challenging Ross that there's no good deed. Do you know which episode I'm talking about? And she's like, you can't name any good deed that you're not benefiting from as well.
Yeah.
Which, so, you know, can you really do good acts of kindness or anything nice for your partner without it being on some level selfish?
Is every act of love that you give the person you want to be with, is that with the intention to keep them, to make them yours, to maintain their loyalty?
I think that's treading in dangerous waters. When you're around the territory of I'm doing something to keep you, that for me is going to a place of toxicity. And I'm not talking about toxicity for the other person or for the relationship, but for your own self and for your own well-being. Because the outcome of it is you requiring continuous validation. That continuous validation is either reciprocated or it's not. If you're not being validated, what happens to your self-esteem now? That's a really tricky spot to be. I would rather do things for my partner because I know it makes them happy. Or for my friends because I know it brings a smile to their face. Now, does it make me happy as well? Yes. Does it mean I'm doing it because I want them to continue being friends with me? No. When you're in that territory of, ooh, I'm holding on by a piece of string, so I'm going to do nice things for them to keep them. And I've been there where you're doing everything you can to hold on to this man and it just doesn't work.
Let's pull back from this a little bit and start with how we first learned about real love, real relationships, real friendships.
How society teaches us about love and relationships and friendship.
I've been thinking a lot about this lately because I'm nearing elderly age.
Oh, stop it.
And
stop it.
I haven't found that reciprocal love. I'm also trying to really pay attention to the people that I see on social media who speak the same way I do. When am I going to find a love that is wholesome and pure and just full of joy? When am I going to find that? When I see other people talk about it, I'm able to really think about it more critically. For the origins is movies and television. And it's kind of depressing to think about, but this is where my mind was going when I was on my second rom-com yesterday. I watched Lindsay Lohan's. I'm not sure if this is a new movie. I don't know. It appeared on my Netflix homepage. It's called Irish Wish.
Oh, is that out?
I saw it.
Yeah.
Okay. I watched it at 8:30 a.m. yesterday because I turned on my TV while I was playing with my dog, and I was just about to put on like a show, you know, just that kind of goes
background.
Into, yeah. But that came up on that preview screen, and it was like a scene from it that I just got hooked on. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll press play. I'll just watch the first 5 minutes. 2 hours later, I had watched a full rom-com at 8:30 a.m.
I love it. Was it good?
It was spectacular. Okay. Highly recommend. Later in the day, I watched another rom-com. I don't even remember the name of it. Oh, yes. It's called The Hating Game.
Oh, I've seen that.
Not good.
Yeah. That's cheesy.
Yeah.
That's
real cheesy rom-com. A little too cheesy for me. I kept thinking, does this exist? Is anything real? Like, that's where my mind was going. I was like, do any couples actually have this? Or is the only place that real love and true romanticism exists fictional? Like,
are we all living on our TV screens?
Yeah.
And we're seeing this unreasonable portrayal of love, and we're trying so hard to make that a reality, perhaps. But let's go back to the beginning. You're an infant. First exposure to love and relationships is the one you have with your parents. And so that's your first take on what a relationship is. What is a marriage? And I used to work in a Montessori. This is like when I was in uni, and you have to have like extra credit. So I had to work. And I remember the kids, the crap that comes out of kids' mouths, that we would have like just chat time. So I would just sit with them and just have chats about life. And they would always talk about relationships. These 5-year-old children, 5, 6, 7-year-olds, were obsessed with relationships. I would know all about their parents' relationship. Miss T, Daddy had to sleep on the couch last night because Mommy and Daddy got in a fight and Daddy wasn't allowed in Mommy's bed. Or, Miss T, do you have a husband? No, I don't. Can I be your husband? Just, this is their, right? They don't know. So they just see relationships, and then that trickles into their cartoons.
With cartoons, there's always a big cat and mouse.
The chase.
With crushes. Yeah. Right. And I feel like that's a big narrative.
From the beginning, you're taught to want what you can't have. There's that chase. And it's usually this girl who is running away, and then the boy cat is chasing her. And we're teaching kids from a young age that these are the standards. And then we're also teaching them that love is this like cute little romance and all this stuff, even as adults. Be honest. How many times have you watched a rom-com or a TV show that's supposed to be about love and relationships, and you looked at yourself and the relationship you were in and either questioned it or asked your partner, why don't we do this? Why don't we go on these cute dates? Oh, we should do those things. How come you never cuddle me that much? How come you never cook me dinner? We bring it into our reality. Why do we let fictional characters, directed movies, to be examples of how our life should be?
I think the straight answer is because we love to idolize things. We love to have hope in our lives. We love to have hope for something greater. And so we're constantly living off of this. There's something better out there. People always say that dating apps introduced the too many options saga that we're all enduring now. But I really don't think so. I think this has been embedded in culture over time to always want something more.
Yeah, but it's a false reality, isn't it? To always think that there's all these options out there. It doesn't exist.
And it plays perfectly into your ego.
It does.
In a terrible way.
Mm-hmm. Ego is a funny thing when it comes to relationships, especially romantic relationships, because ego has the power to allow you to grow together, and it has the power to grow apart. And that's all because the basis of that ego is, I'm right, you're wrong. The minute you say we are right, or even you're right, you change things. One of the things I look for in a partner is having his ego in check. And the reason is because I think for me, at least, ego equals division. That's really what it comes down to. Because if you have an ego, you think you're somehow better or worse, whatever extreme, than me, than other people. There's a comparison. There's a divide that you're creating. So how are you supposed to be in a healthy team, in a healthy partnership, if that exists in our space?
The deconstruction of your ego in a relationship has to start with the great dishwasher loading debate.
What is that?
You don't know about the dishwasher loading debate between couples. There's always one person in a couple that does not know how to load the dishwasher. And there's another person that knows exactly how to load the dishwasher. Is a very right versus wrong debate. The person that thinks they know how to load the dishwasher.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Believes they are correct.
I have never had that issue with any of my exes.
Okay. Well, that's like the biggest debate. It has to start here. Not because you need to resolve that debate between you two, but because you need to recognize that you debating that issue is your ego. You thinking you're right about how to load a dish. I know what all those people out there that think they know how to load it, they're still nodding their heads like, no, but I'm right.
This is the correct way.
So how could this, but look at yourself right now.
Yeah.
That is your ego. And you are unable to separate yourself from it. Yeah. This is part of the problem. This is the very nature of how the ego gets in the way. So if you're unable to even start with that and recognize that that is a separate part of you, how are the bowls loaded for you?
So it depends what kind of dishwasher. Because I've had dishwashers where it has like a bowl section. But like the normal ones, I just put them on the same rack as the cups.
Yeah.
And it also depends what kind of bowl it is. If it's the cereal bowl, which is fully round, versus the more, you know, which ones I'm
talking about. You can get away with a sideways slant. Yeah.
So it depends.
With the more shallow bowls.
But to your point, I don't think I've had the debate, not because the issue was probably never there, but because whoever I was with at the time either suggested a better way of doing it without putting me down, or I suggested a better way of doing it without putting them down. So it was never, I don't think that's ever been an issue in any of my relationships.
There was no righteousness that came from them. Absolutely. But that is the very basis of that debate. It is righteousness versus righteousness.
But I could imagine if I was with someone, well, even a friend, and they were like, in a very harsh way, no, you're doing it wrong. This is how it should be. One time you can kind of let it go. Two times you can let it go. But if this becomes a habit, you're wearing me down. So then I don't feel like I even want to speak up or give you my opinion or contribute to the conversation. And then over time, so yeah, you're either wearing me down or you're bringing out my angry side, which if I have an ego, then my ego will pop up. You know, I'll challenge you on everything.
What would you say to those couples that insist that banter is the very essence of their relationship? They both equally will go after each other and have no problem swearing at each other in the middle of the kitchen. And they deem that as healthy, and they are married for 75 years.
Love that.
What is the difference between them and
it's the intent. a joke is a joke. And I'm not talking about you fellows or gals out there who there's a under the belt jab and you're like, I was just joking. Can you not take a joke? I'm not talking about good banter. Is art.
You're on an even playing field.
It's humorous. It's funny. It also allows the person to not get embarrassed if what they did was maybe a little bit silly. It opens up room for you to be yourselves. Mm-hmm. It creates a safe space. Love banter. I think couples who banter go a long way. Mm-hmm. I think couples who hold shit back and just simply don't even joke around or bring things up, that's dangerous for me. Like, my red flag is when someone's like, I never fight. I'm like, what's your definition of fighting, first of all? I've dated a guy and I remember every time we had a constructive discussion, and you know me, I rarely fight because I'm just not that kind of person. But when I would have discussions because I would want to challenge him on things, or he'd, you know, challenge me on something and I'd want to show my point of view, he would call that fighting. Mm. And so I think it's important to know what your definition of fighting is. But when people turn around, they're like, we never fight. I'm like, how? How is that a healthy relationship? Do you have disagreements? And if you don't, one of you is the golden retriever and one of you is the black cat. So the black cat is the one who is like cold, dismissive, avoidant, like a black cat. Always wants to chase, doesn't want to chase. Whereas the golden retriever is like cuddly and cute and just will love you forever. And will just, when you open the door, he's right there being like, I love you, I love you, I love you.
So is this a bad pairing?
So there, a lot of people are saying in a relationship, there's always both of these. So you need to figure out which one you are.
I am most definitely a golden retriever.
100% you're the golden retriever. Without a doubt, I would think you're the golden retriever.
Like, when I get in a guy's car, there's no difference between me and a dog. I'm just like sitting in that seat and looking out the window like, where are we going?
It's the cutest thing ever. I can just picture you just being all like,
hi. I'm just there for the ride.
Head out the window.
Yeah.
Such a nice day.
Literally, because I get motion sickness. So I got it.
Oh my God. I'm making a t-shirt for you.
I have no shame in it.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Do you think you have an ego in a relationship?
Yeah.
Really?
I have to answer begrudgingly because I always think I'm right. I have a hard time separating it. Mm. For sure.
Is it because you want to be right, or is it because you want to explain that thought process?
Okay, so I'm actually a great example for this podcast.
Okay.
Because I have a serious God complex on an individual level. I truly believe that every single thought in my mind is correct.
Yeah.
I also am very aware that I am self-aware. Mm-hmm. So I'm the worst of the worst because I'll come in to relationship thinking, well, like, I'm better than your exes because even though, like, I'm pretty stubborn, at least I know I'm stubborn. So, right. Like, we're going to be able to work through this.
Right.
But I still come in with all of these things going, I'm right.
Right.
No, you cannot load the dishwasher like this. Mm. So if you can't do it that way, I've got to load it then.
Okay.
And all that stuff. So yeah, I cannot separate it. And in the effect that I will only go after men who I believe can work with my personality.
So
right? More
passive?
Or no, just very
agreeable.
Agreeable, okay. But that sounds like... then they're passive. It's more I go after someone who can banter with me, who if they have an issue with it, that they've got to come to the table with something smarter. I'm welcoming of smarter opinions and thoughts and being challenged, but you've got to be smarter than me.
But
so my bar is quite high.
So hold on. That's a lot. That's a lot. So first of all, I don't think you ever want to be in a relationship where you're telling your partner, you're allowed to tell me what to do or like give me your opinion if it's smarter. Like, that's just not a nice thing to say.
Well, I don't say it that way, but that's who but I go after.
Feel.
I go after men who will be smarter than me, who I deem
okay.
could be smarter than me. That's right. who I go after.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. Okay. So you value intellect.
Yeah.
And so you want someone who's able to keep up with your intellect as well. Okay. Sorry. So when you say it like that, it makes more sense. When you originally said it, it sounded like don't even have a rebuttal unless it's like smarter.
Right. No, but I just like, won't engage in that relationship at all. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. But you, yeah, we don't want to talk like that.
Yeah.
You know, when you're like talking to like a child, you're like, no, sweetheart, not a nice thing to say. But I get what you're saying. You want to be around people and you want to, your circle of friends and your mm-hmm. partners, you know, love, all of that is intellectual people because they're able to
challenge me.
Challenge you. Not only just challenge you, because sometimes they don't disagree with you, but they're also able to just have a conversation and keep up the conversation, right? And so oftentimes when you're dealing with people who have a little bit more curiosity, have a little bit more intellect, they're also generally well-rounded. So you can talk about different topics instead of, you know, one topic, which is usually their career, and then that's kind of boom, boom, boom.
Precisely. Now, do you see why my pool is so small? Okay, moving on. We're talking about ego.
Well, yeah, I can see that. But I also think a big part of that is your own sabotage.
This is why I'm saying I'm a good example. Because we're trying to tell people to separate their ego from themselves.
Yeah.
When I am the worst of the worst. And like, you don't even know where to start with me.
I know, but I think the fact that you're aware and you're not working on fixing it. It's just a tad problematic.
Yeah, but what am I supposed to do? Make myself dumber?
No, but
Jesus. No, but this is my point. No, this is my point. This is what you're up against.
So remember
when we're
we
trying
had
to
a
tell
podcast
people.
About being stoic.
No, no, it just
the idea is not to think you're smarter or dumber or to think that the only way you can be around other people is to be. No, I'm saying if you're attracted to smart, intellectual, and they could be smart in their own way. You have people with high IQs and very low EQs. A lot of certain people in certain industries like tech, right? They're insanely smart. Like they just built a robot, but they're not able to have a normal conversation with people at the bar. That's not who you want. So it's also important. It's like, yes, you want intellect. You want them to know about history and to know about philosophy and all this stuff. But you also want them to have level of social IQ as well. EQ. Because that's the point of it. That's the point of them being able to converse with you.
But where in this is me trying to change myself so I'm not self-sabotaging?
Because... and this was going to be my follow-up question to you was the way we communicate is really important. You might think you're doing something correctly, but to be able to provide space to your friends and your loved ones to be able to give their feedback without feeling like you're judging them is important. So for example, you're loading the dishwasher and he's trying to help you and he's doing it incorrectly. How are you communicating to him that the way he's doing it you think is wrong? And I think that's where you could work on. But I don't know how you do it. So well, I was just going to ask a follow-up.
Okay,
and I was going to say, how do you... I don't know how you communicate with them, so I don't want to assume.
Oh, boy. So I don't give them the opportunity, but I can see how that comes across. Mm-hmm. I don't give them the opportunity to load the dishwasher. I do it ahead of time.
So what if they surprise you one day and do it? Monica, you're Monica.
I may be rewashing some of the dishes.
Okay, but do you say something to them? Do you say like,
no.
Why did you do the dishwasher?
No, but I okay. can see how my actions
makes them feel.
Oh, yeah.
Like, why are you redoing it? Okay, so funny example. I used to live with a very, very close friend of mine, and she was insanely OCD. You know I'm not OCD. I'm just mm-hmm. kind of like normal. whatever that means. And she would do that. So a lot of times we'd have drinks, we'd cook together, and I would wash up, and she would literally, as I'm sitting there finishing my drink, would go to the sink and rewash my dishes. Did it offend me? Absolutely not.
Yeah, because but that's who I'm trying to get into a relationship with.
Right. But it's the way she did it that didn't offend me.
So what?
So she just went and she was like, "Sorry, babe, you know me. I have my issues." Like And I was like, "Do your thing, girl." Like,
okay.
Do you think I didn't wash them properly? And she's like, No, it's not that. It's just I just have to do it my way.
Yeah.
Okay. Do that. But you're not putting me down. Right. There was no conflict. There was no aggression of, oh, like, you know, you didn't do it correctly, or you trying to fix me. I don't want to feel like I'm trying to be fixed. And then the best part of that was I realized she loved doing the dishes and she loved doing certain. So I just didn't do it.
Right.
Because I was like, I know she wants to do it. And that was okay. She never got upset with me about it. I never got upset about it. I particularly was probably not as neat as her. So I made sure someone came in the house once a week, cleaned it, because I had to do my part as well.
So your part was the cleaner.
But because she just didn't trust my cleaning.
Yeah, no, yeah. Right? Totally get it.
Dude, she would like bleach everything too, which is great. Our apartment was spotless. I loved it. But it's also important that I didn't turn around and get annoyed with her as well. You're looking for someone who is able to say, this is who you are, this is who I am, and we're coexisting together without judging each other. See, okay, so that was my follow-up to you. My follow-up was, are you criticizing them for being who they are? And if you're not communicating in a bad way, if you're not communicating in a way that's putting them down, it's a work in progress.
Yeah, so that's a really good point, because on the flip side, I was in a relationship for a long time where the other person did put me down. Mm-hmm. I would try to do things quietly and with quirk. Right. I would show my quirk about it. Mm-hmm. But their reaction was putting me down, because their reaction was always, how can we better you? How can we change you? Yeah, it's funny that you say it that way, because I didn't even really realize that that was what it felt like when they were speaking to me that way.
How did you feel when you felt like you were being changed? How did you feel at that, in those moments?
Just very low. Mm. Just like wanted right out of that conversation, wanted right out of that moment, not good about myself.
And then over time, because I know you were with this person for a long time, over time, what happened? Did that turn into just you kind of just being super low about yourself, or that turn into you resenting them? You can only be sad for so long, and then other things start playing up, right?
I think it led to the downfall of everything. I think it ultimately led to the downfall of communication, just lack of general excitement to want to do things with that person, because you just feel like at any point they're going to
put you down.
But it's weird, because you don't realize when it's happening that that's the reason you say no the next time they ask you to do something small.
Yeah.
And it just snowpiles.
That's exactly what we just said, wasn't it? Except ours was the reverse. It's when you think you're right all the time, the other person just doesn't want to speak up. Mm-hmm. And in your case, you were dealing with someone who their ego was even bigger than yours, and they were putting you down. So maybe now your coping mechanism to all of that is, I'm going to have the bigger ego in this, because I'm going to make sure you don't put me down anymore.
Oh boy. And that's how you bring it into the next relationship.
That's how you bring baggage.
Yeah. Yeah. Baggage doesn't necessarily have to be, oh, I don't trust you because if this happened to me. It could be things like you bringing a bigger ego.
Yeah.
Right up front.
Yeah. And I don't think a lot of us are born with it, right? It's developed. It's our ego is nurtured. We learn. Sometimes we do it to protect ourselves. I think a lot of times, not with everyone, But I think a lot of times ego is when there's some sort of insecurity involved.
Those insecurities can be built in a number of ways. And one of those ways can be through media. Mm-hmm. And how we are exposed to not just movies and television, but nowadays social media.
Yeah.
This fictional love mm-hmm. in front of us. We build insecurities slowly as we're continually exposed
yeah.
to great love on social media. Even though a lot of us can say, oh, we see through that now, there's still a piece of us that will watch a video or two and say, oh, that is the love I want. But how do you know?
That's still your ego. The minute you're comparing yourself to something else, the minute you look at the contestants on Love is Blind and you say, I would never act like that. That's your ego. It's always going to play a role. We're always going to have it. I don't think it's about trying not to have ego because that's unrealistic. But it's how do we manage it?
How do you manage it without becoming numb?
How do you manage it without becoming numb? How do you manage it without losing yourself, losing your identity? Being confident and being the person who speaks up and being the person who stands for what you believe in is important. You do it in a way that you speak up, but you allow space for criticism, constructive criticism. You allow space for feedback. You're open-minded enough that there's room in your mind that you could be wrong. Even scientists, when they prove something, they never say 100% because 100% doesn't exist. They always say 99.9%. And that's science. It's the most accurate thing you can get to reality. And they won't even say 100%. Meanwhile, we're all walking around here saying, I'm 100% right.
I think really the key to keeping your ego in check, specifically in relationships, is balancing you practicing being a realist mm-hmm. and your hopeless romanticism. I think, you know, we've talked a lot about this in other podcasts, the balance that's needed between being a hopeless romantic to keep the passion alive
yeah.
in whatever connection you're exploring. But I think it's just as important to inject realism through every piece of your relationship.
Yeah. You don't want to be in Delulu land walking around thinking, oh, I'm not dating this guy anymore because he didn't show up with dozen roses on a first date. And I'm not dating this guy anymore because my first trip wasn't booked on a private jet. All these fake standards that have been created for us with movies and reality shows.
What would you say to the hopeless romantic, aka me, who still wants to believe that they are the chosen one and they will get that love that's in the rom-com and that love does exist?
I think the love you're talking about, the unicorn love, does exist. But it might not come with 100% of the package, right? But I think you know that. I think deep down you know that. And I think while you sit there and you say, I want this perfect version of love, in every episode that we've talked about, even on and off screen, you've also said, I love the person for who they are. I've seen you take the person with their flaws. With little quirks in their character, and you still accept it and you conform to them. Mm-hmm. So I think you being a hopeless romantic is your definition of it is not far-fetched from reality. Mm. Right? But like there are people, even guys out there, that their definition is just way out of this world. Even for us women.
It's completely detached from reality.
How is that helping you? Like, just out of curiosity, actually, I'm going to put this out there. How does having such unrealistic expectations, and I'm not talking about high standards. You're allowed to have high standards because maybe you expect a lot because you also give a lot. I'm saying unrealistic expectations when it comes to love. How is that helping you? How is that benefiting you?
Well, when you're single, it helps keep you hopeful and positive. It helps keep your spirit alive every day.
But then you go on dates and you're mm-hmm. like, wait, no. Because mm-hmm. I genuinely, my bar for love, I would say is like medium. It's not too high. It's not too low. It's quite, because I understand people come with flaws. I also think the perfect love doesn't exist when you meet the person. You create the perfect love together. And this is where I test a lot of this content being thrown out there of, you need to be the best version of you before you get to meet someone else, you know, who you want to date. No, you got to be on the right direction. You got to be in headed towards a path, on the right path. And if you meet someone, you can now build your life together. You can't be this 100% great, because then there's no room for this person anymore. You've built your life. Your life is complete, according to you. Yeah, I don't know, girl. It's a little bit sad what we've done to ourselves a bit, where we've created these massive egos and friendships and relationships. Because of our egos, we've all grown apart. We've created this distance between our ego and the potential of great loves.
I think most people are still searching for connection, but I think a large part of why they can't find it is because their ego is standing in their own way.
Mm-hmm. You know, since we're talking about dating, I had a date. Well, I actually didn't have a date because I didn't go. I had a date planned. The guy had set a time, but we didn't set a location. And then I just didn't hear from him for like 2 days. And it was, the date was like, let's say Friday at 7:30. I think it was Friday, like 3 p.m. I had no idea where we were going, so I had no idea how to plan. It was also quite south. I had to like drive for a bit to get there. He knows I don't live near that area. Zero prep and planning time. And then all of a sudden, 2 hours before, he messages me and says, hey, are we all set? And I had to send him a message and say, I'm so sorry, I didn't hear from you all, like, not just today, but I didn't hear from you yesterday. So I had no idea what was going on. I assumed you were flaking. I've made other plans. And I think about that all the time, because I think, was that my ego? Or was that just laziness?
Or was it you practicing self-respect?
Right.
For your own boundaries?
Some things are just so great, because I really don't know what made me say, could I have gotten ready in an hour? 100%. It doesn't take much for me to get ready, get in my car and drive.
This is the main reason why we want to do these podcasts, is because we're trying to get away from the standard advice that keeps circulating. And one of those pieces of advice is around this whole idea that if he doesn't text you at a certain time during the day, that you need to set your boundaries and da 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 da. Mm-hmm. And it's all fine and well. There isn't anything particularly wrong with establishing rules like that for yourself. Mm-hmm. But when you came to me and you were asking my opinion on this day, I said, look, everyone has their own standards. I know me personally, I would probably give it more time, but I am not in the business of trying to convince you of where you should set your own boundaries for yourself.
Yeah.
So I think the conversation needs to be more around, like, why did we establish this rule to begin with? Why is it a rule? Like, if you only hear from him at this point, then it's good. Then, you know, all that stuff.
Self-respect.
But also it was established because there were so many men or people in general that were doing this on the day of, exhibiting this kind of behavior of not giving a shit, only texting you 30 minutes before the date, and people were connecting the dots together,
right,
and saying, okay, this says this about that kind of person. This means they are that kind of person. and they're not taking dating seriously. They're not going to take you seriously. Right. This is what that says about all that stuff. And that's where I find you have to give some forgiveness because not everyone's the same.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But also, yeah, it's okay to be hyper aware of these things as well. I think it's just important to question things on a consistent basis.
Absolutely allow grace for whoever we're starting to date or even our friends, right? It really does go back to communication and just setting expectations, whether it's, you know, in your work with your colleagues or with your friends or dating scene. If you communicate to people ahead of time about what they should expect or what's coming or the uncertainty of things, you're now setting the appropriate expectation leading up to whatever is about to happen. And so going back to this whole dating experience, had this gentleman messaged me and said, hey, we might have to play by ear. I'll message you a couple hours before, then we'll figure it out. That completely changes the situation. I've dated people in the past where because of their jobs, we really couldn't plan anything. Even holidays, we couldn't plan until hours before because they were on call or whatever. That's fine because the communication, the transparency is there. Even us, if you and I have plans and I say, okay, we'll go out Friday night. And then I just don't talk to you for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually with us, we would just assume it's canceled. Never mind. But you know what I mean. It is about transparency and communication and setting the right. And this kind of goes back to work as well. People in certain jobs where you have to deal with clients, I always find that if you set the expectation with the client and you give them the bad news and you say, listen, or good news, whatever they're about to expect, I'll message you or you'll hear from me on Monday. They now know they won't hear from you for 5 days until Monday. You're setting the right expectation so people are not sat there getting anxiety, wondering, waiting.
I think I'm just realizing now the main issue I have with this whole self-help, creating boundaries and then spewing them out into the world through podcasts or through books in these hard and fast rules, is it does create that divisiveness. It does build up this righteousness inside of us. He or she said that if they don't text me by this time, or if my boss says this to me in this way, that they are this kind of person.
Yeah.
And I have every right to feel the way I do. And it builds up your righteousness. And guess what?
Yeah.
It builds up your ego. And now you are your own worst enemy. Because you're building this inflated sense of yourself and you're bringing that out into the world and you're just as bad as the person who is rudely not texting you the morning of your date or rudely, you know, it's not just as bad.
I do not think that there is more constructive ways of communicating versus not.
Yes,
I'm not going to use the words right or wrong.
Yes.
But are there not more constructive ways of communication versus others?
Yes.
Better solution-oriented ways than others.
Yes, but that's what you have to focus on.
Right.
It's when you are waiting for that date and you don't get the text until 30 minutes before, your reply should not be, no thanks, not going out with you anymore. You just showed me who you really are. Oh, I know girls like that. 100%. Who act like that.
I know girls like that
too. Your reply
that
should
is
be
wrong.
Yeah, you should have a coherent, respectable, adult response back to this.
Yeah.
If you don't and you can't control yourself, you're letting that.
But you're also not ready for dating.
Well, yeah, you're letting that build your sense of righteousness up, and that's not good either. So
no,
like,
you can't be entitled. You can't walk around thinking people owe you anything. But at the same time, if you feel like someone isn't respecting the things you stand for, you're allowed to say, this is no longer for me. Just as much as you're not allowed to point your finger at them and criticize them, you're allowed to just say, this isn't what I'm looking for, and that's fine. And they can't get mad at you for that.
And that comes back to where we started this when we talked about you can't do things for your partner and expect a reward back, because that what that does as well is it creates this feeling between you two of, well, I'm expecting something in return. I am entitled to something.
And you know, the biggest one of the biggest downfalls in our society at the moment is entitlement. Everyone's walking around thinking they're entitled to every single thing they want. It's just, it's terrifying.
Your entitlement is your ego.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm right.
You are right. You are right.
Oh, we got to go fix my hooker boots, guys. We'll catch you next
week.
And
I got to go load the dishwasher. Bye.